Welcome to the Dublin Bible Talks, midweek Bible Talks for workers in Dublin. I'm Cameron Jones. In this new year, have you got enough security? It's something we want from our leaders. We want one who can secure a good future for us. In 1 Samuel 8, a new section of the book begins. What kind of leader do God's people need for their future? And please consider joining us live on Wednesdays from your workplace, 1 p.m. Dublin time on Zoom. It's a simple way of identifying as a Christian in your workplace. Simply use the link bit.ly/Dublin Bible Talks. That's bit.ly/Dublin Bible Talks. Friends, all of us want security for us and for those we love. Our search for security tells us a lot about what we fear. We don't smoke because we want to secure ourselves against lung cancer. We recycle because we want to secure ourselves and the planet against climate change. We save and invest in property and shares and pensions to secure ourselves against poverty and against old age, to secure our independence. Where we look for security also tells us a lot about what we believe, about who and about what we trust. And marketing capitalizes upon our insecurities. Are your investments as secure as they could be? Is your home as secure as it could be? Are your children's futures and their present as secure as they could be? Do you know where they are? Do you know what they're doing? Use Find Me. Use my doorbell camera. Use the real-time camera feed to see. Part of the reason this is so effective is that we are not really sure even what security means. But it's also something that we expect leaders to give us, isn't it? The leader of a nation is entrusted with the nation's security. And we might even expect that they will play their part in global security, whatever that means. You'll remember in 1 Samuel chapter 7 that we saw Samuel was the kind of leader that Israel did need, because he was able to speak God's words to God's people. He was able to tell them that the greatest threat to their security was actually God himself, because they had provoked him to anger. Samuel, as a leader, was able to tell them that their only hope was then to turn back to the God that they had angered. Samuel was the leader they needed because he called the people back to the Lord, chapter 7, verse 3. And in chapter 7, verse 9, he interceded with God on their behalf. The summary of Samuel's leadership in chapter 7, verses 15 to 17 records that he judged Israel. He was the one who put things right in the nation, either by defeat of the enemies or by sorting out internal disputes. He helped peace and prosperity and security in the nation. What we're looking at today and in the coming weeks is a little known but tremendously important series of events in the history of God's Old Testament people, Israel. And it starts in chapter 8 with security being threatened. And the threat is Samuel's old age. And in his old age, he does something which is quite strange. In chapter 8, verse 1, if you see there, he made his sons judges. And we find out that they are not like their father. We're given their names, Joel and Abijah, and we're told where they did their work, and also told that their work is characterized by taking bribes and perverting justice. You see, there is a problem that Samuel faces. The problem that Samuel faces is his age. And we are reminded of his predecessor as he makes these decisions, old Eli, who himself had judged Israel for 40 years. He had been an old man in the book since chapter 2, verse 2. He was very old. In chapter 3, verse 2, his eyesight was failing. In chapter 4, verse 15, he's 98 years old. In chapter 4, verse 17, he dies, and we are reminded that he dies as an old man. And that old man, Eli, is now replaced by the old man, Samuel. Growing old has its positives and its negatives. And some of the downsides, well, it's decreased energy and increased physical weakness. And even more, death is getting closer. The era of security under Samuel was wonderful, but the predictable fact of old age and death is a great threat to security. And so old Samuel tries an experiment. It's a strange experiment because in Israel, leadership has never been hereditary, except regarding the priesthood. Now, judgeship was very clearly not hereditary. The judge called Gideon rightly refused to make his son the ruler over Israel back in Judges chapter 8, verses 22 to 24. So why does Samuel do it? Especially when he knew what had happened with old Eli's sons, Hophni and Phinehas. And the parallels we find between Samuel appointing his sons and their names being given, that's done in such a way that it will immediately remind us of what Eli did and his evil sons. Eli had done a reasonable job as a priest in his own era in those early chapters of Samuel, but his performance is no guarantee that his sons would be any good. Oh, and they weren't. They were worthless. They were called sons of Belial. They used their position for personal gain. They abused the people that they were meant to serve. So why on earth does Samuel think that appointing his sons to his place would be a good idea? We're not told why he thought it was a good idea, but what we are told clearly and quite quickly is that it was a mistake, for Samuel's sons are perverters of justice. The pattern continues. So what is to be done? Where will the people of Israel find security and peace and prosperity and justice now that Samuel is getting old and his sons are awful? Who will judge Israel now? Who will bring them peace and prosperity and security and justice? Well, verses 4 through to 18, the people of Israel, their leaders, come up with what is really a bizarre proposal. Look at verse 4 of 1 Samuel chapter 8. Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, "Behold, you are old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint us a king to judge us like all the nations." Give us a king, they say. And isn't this a bizarre proposal? Of course, the leaders of Israel think it's a very reasonable proposal. I mean, their assessment is correct. I mean, they're not very subtle, are they? They come up to Samuel and say, "You're old." And they come up to him and they say, "Your sons are no good." But their analysis is accurate. But they suggest a king. They suggest a king, and they think that a king really could establish Israel. A king really could build a stable political structure and could organize the nation into a real nation. They think a king could give a focus for national unity and dignity and security. After all, they might have said, this is the Iron Age now. We're not in the Stone Age any longer, or the Bronze Age. All the other nations have kings, becoming efficient, they're becoming prosperous, they're becoming secure. But in Israel, we lurch from crisis to crisis. Now, appoint for us, Samuel, a king to judge us like the nations have. Can you see how reasonable this suggestion might seem? I mean, you can see, can't you, that if we'd been there, we'd have looked at the situation and looked around the world that we lived in, and we'd have seen all the other nations around us getting organized and growing and making towns and even cities. And we would have heard this proposal from the elders and probably be nodding our heads. It's a sensible organizational model with a proven track record. And friends, while we are very different in very many ways, sometimes I will hear similar kind of proposals in Christian contexts. They're very common in culture right now, where people will come up with a plan to make the church successful again. Plans to get Christianity listened to in a way that the world will respect. The proven experience of management is how we can do this. The principles that make other organizations thrive and grow, we can learn from Google and X and TikTok and HubSpot and from the startups and from the corporates who have weathered the storms. If only we had strategies and plans like them, then the church could really have an impact. Oh, can you hear the echo of the leaders of Israel in that? Give us a king like the other nations. And so we see the thinking of the elders in 1 Samuel chapter 8 verse 5 is not strange even to us very many years later. However reasonable it seemed, we as readers of the book can immediately see that it is breathtaking for its stupidity. See, the events that we've covered so far in chapters 1 to 7 show us that this proposal that the elders bring is stunningly bizarre. Even if we'd only read the first three verses of this chapter, we would have been amazed the elders would propose having a king as a solution. Just hear the logic of the elders that we see in verse 5 in the context of what we've already learned about hereditary leadership in 1 Samuel. They say, "You're old and your sons don't walk in your ways. So set up a system for us of leadership where sons succeed fathers." The big difference between a king and all other forms of leadership that Israel had known is that kingship is hereditary in nature. In theory, that's what makes kingship stable and predictable. It removes the uncertainty that comes the end of a leader's life. In kingship, the eldest son takes over, and that's the attraction. But what has Israel's experience been twice over of this system? Their experience has been that the very best of leaders can have the very worst of sons. And so the request of the leaders is absurd. But it's more than that. Samuel sees what their request is actually a vote of no confidence in his leadership. See verse 6, "The thing displeased Samuel when they said, 'Give us a king to judge us,' and Samuel prayed to the Lord." But the Lord has a way of thinking that takes everyone by surprise. And the Lord, verse 7, said to Samuel, "Obey the voice of the people in all they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them. According to all the deeds that they have done, from the day I brought them up out of Egypt to this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so they are doing to you. Now then, obey their voice. Only then shall you solemnly warn them and show them the ways." The word ways there is the word justice or judging. "Show them the judging of a king who shall reign over them." Apart from being clearly illogical, what is really wrong with the elders' proposal? Listen to everything they're saying, says God, and you'll see the utter unfaithfulness of it. This is not a no-confidence vote in Samuel. It is a vote of no confidence in God. Remember back to chapter 7, the defeat of the Philistines. Think back to chapters 4 to 6 and the way in which Israel's enemies were brought to their knees. And ask the question, where have the people of Israel ever found peace and security? Whenever they've had it, where has it come from? It has come from God. Without a king, we have learned that the God of Israel is perfectly capable of looking after himself and his people without their help. That has been the lessons of chapter 1 to 7 of 1 Samuel. Political, organizational, institutional structures cannot provide security for God's people. God does that. And so listen again to their request. "Give us a king like the other nations. Make us like those people who are not God's people. Make us like the Gentiles. Make us a bit more like the Philistines." After we have just read what the one true God did to that people, the Philistines, all by himself, on behalf of his people, the point is that God himself is the king of Israel, and this proposal in having a king like the other nations is really rejecting God as their king, a rejection of them to be a holy nation, a priestly kingdom. Look at the monarchies of the nations. Look at the monarchies of Philistia. Do they call on their people to return to the living God like Samuel did in chapter 7? Do they pray for their people to be before the living God like Samuel did? No, no, the kings of the nations don't do that. That's not what they're interested in at all. What then kind of security do they deliver, these kings like the other nations have? And again, we should think about the plans that we have for Christian churches and missions and ministries, or even the Dublin Bible Talks, that focus primarily on saying we should get insights and plans from business and consulting methodologies to be our primary focus for how we're going to improve. Friends, as we consider that as an option, just ask, do you find that in those businesses where those practices are being implemented, that godliness grows? Do you find a growth in prayerfulness and humility and love and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and self-control come as a result of business strategies operated in those businesses? Then what kind of effectiveness are you really offering if we're saying we want to have it run like the nations have? So isn't it puzzling that God says to Samuel to heed the voice of the elders? Although he must first warn about the justice they are asking for, and that is what Samuel does in verses 10 to 18. Notice the theme that runs through those verses. Verse 11, he will take your sons. Verse 13, he will take your daughters. Verse 14, he will take your fields and your vineyards and your olive orchards. Verse 15, he will take a tenth of your flocks, etc. Verse 16, he will take your servants, your young men, your donkeys. Verse 17, you will be his slaves. Just like you had been in Egypt. Just what God had rescued you from, you are asking to go back into. Verse 18, notice the repetition for emphasis. And in that day you will cry out because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves. But the Lord will not answer you in that day. You will no longer be like chapter 7, verse 9, where Samuel cried out to the Lord for Israel and the Lord answered. No, it won't be like that anymore. In verses 19 to 22, we see the proposal is confirmed. Despite these warnings, we read in verse 19, but the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, no, but there shall be a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. And when Samuel had heard all the words of the people, he repeated them in the ears of the Lord. And what is the Lord's reply? Verse 22. And the Lord said to Samuel, obey their voice and make them a king. Samuel said to the men of Israel, go every man to his city. Well, that's where we leave it for the moment. But let's look back over this story from a perspective of many years later. Around about 1,000 or so years later, a man stood before a representative of the great power of that day. That representative of the great power was Pontius Pilate. But the man standing in front of this king's delegate was asked a question. Pilate asked this man, are you the king of the Jews? And the man's reply was, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from the world. Do you see what that man was saying? He's saying he is not a king like all the other nations have a king. Friends, this message of this king, the message of the gospel found in the New Testament, is that there is a king worth having. But he is a king whose kingship is entirely different to the kings of the other nations. And to want a leader like the leaders of this world is a helpless and foolish option. The message of this gospel, this good news, is that there is a king whose justice is completely different from the king that Samuel said their king was going to be, that they chose for themselves. No, Jesus is a king who does not take and take and take. Jesus is a king who gives and gives and gives. Friends, listen to this translation of Romans 3 that reflects something of the themes and compare them to the kind of king that the people were asking for. The justice of God has been manifested. The justice of God through the faithfulness of King Jesus to all who believe. For there is no distinction, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God and are justified. This is God's justice by his grace as a gift through the redemption that is in King Jesus. This was to show God's justice. It was to show his justice at the present time so that he might be just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. There, friends, is a king to judge us, to a king who brings a different kind of peace and justice and security, a king we will find more echoes of as we keep going through 1 Samuel. But see the contrast between King Jesus and the king demanded by the people in 1 Samuel 8. And recognize in ourselves that we tend to want what Israel wanted. One to make us like the nations. But ask God to lift our eyes to see the king we need, who can give true security. Thank you for listening to the recording of the Dublin Bible Talks. You can join us in real time on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Dublin time on Zoom, bit.ly/Dublin Bible Talks. That's bit.ly/Dublin Bible Talks.